Welcome to Work From Your Happy Place, the podcast that equips you with the tools, know-how, and motivation to live your dreams and find your happy place. Be sure to sign up for our free weekly newsletter for a recap of the week's guests and a preview of what's in store. To sign up, simply text the word happy place with no space to 33444. Now, it's my pleasure to introduce the host of Work From Your Happy Place, Belinda Ellsworth.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Work From Your Happy Place. I'm your host, Belinda Ellsworth, and I've got a great guest today, Robert Glaser. He is the founder and CEO of Acceleration Partners, a top global performance marketing agency. AP has received many awards for both its industry performance and its company culture, and he was honored to be named the number 2 ranked small and medium business CEO by Glassdoor last year. He also started Friday Forward, an inspirational newsletter that reaches over 100,000 readers each week, and is the author of 2 books, the international bestseller Performance Partnerships and Elevate, which comes out in October of this year. It is my pleasure to welcome Robert to our show.
Thanks, Belinda. Excited to join you today.
Yeah. So let's just jump right in and fill in some of the gaps of your bio. Why don't you tell us a little bit more about yourself and then your journey and how you got where you are today?
It was a long and windy journey. I'm currently the CEO of a company called Acceleration Partners. As you mentioned, we are a global performance marketing agency. We work in the affiliate marketing space with large brands who are looking to do more partner marketing and build up large groups of relationships where their partners get paid on a performance basis. So that's, you know, what we do, and how we do it is we've really tried to build a culture and a company, particularly in the marketing agency space, that goes against a lot of the conventional norms and does things differently. And I think that's been behind a lot of our growth. And I've been sort of in the growth space for a while. I used to work in strategy consulting, then did a stint in venture capital, worked in an operating company, and then decided I was rapidly becoming unemployable and actually started 2 businesses at the time, one of which is continues on today as Acceleration Partners.
Oh, very good. So tell us then a little bit about how the business has shaped your lifestyle today.
Sure. Yeah. The business is really, if someone could come up with a better word than win-win, I'd be happy to swap it in. But that's how we've really designed our business for, and look, I'm a participant in that for our employees, but to be a really best in class, high growth company that challenges people intellectually and gives them great opportunity at the same time, allow them to have a life outside of the work, focus on what's important to them. And, you know, I participate that in the same way. So I love what I do. But we like to sort of work hard, play hard. And I have plenty of things outside of work in terms of personal interests and family and stuff that keeps me busy. And we're focused on people really improving and getting better overall. And we think that we get the business benefit of that, and then they get the benefit of that outside of work. One of our core values as a company is excel and improve, and I think that's something that we look for people who really live that holistically. You know, they're mm-hmm. always looking to get better in their job, and they're the type of people taking classes and improving and pushing themselves and want to be, you know, better parents and spouses and individuals.
Great. So with your business, since you're a global marketing firm, and then so do you have an actual place of business that people come? Do most of your employees work remotely? How give us an idea of the structure of that?
Sure. We've actually settled into the remote model. We started with that and we thought we would outgrow it, but it became a good differentiator for us, particularly as we scaled and really grew and realized that our clients were all over the place. There wasn't a good place for us to go. So we've been able to really build our culture around that. I think what's a little different is that we focused on a solution that we call Hub Cities, where we actually think we also do an all company event every year. We do a lot of team events throughout the year. And we found that hiring people anywhere created a lot of complexity, and it made it hard for us to get together. And frankly, it's hard to recruit, since recruiting is really like a market-based thing. And we're not necessarily looking for just people who are only remote work. We're looking for people who are really kind of best at what they do and are looking for an interesting company. So we focus on cities, and we hire in those cities. And while people do work at home, they get together. As an example, our president was in Singapore this week meeting with our whole Singapore team, and now he's in London tomorrow meeting with our whole UK and Europe team, and sitting with them for a couple of days and doing some development stuff and QA. And we couldn't do that if people were everywhere. So the type of company that we wanted to build, it is about flexibility, but we also feel the need for that contact. And so we found this hub city approach to be kind of the win-win.
That's great. I know I have a few that work in-house, and then I've got a few employees. It's kind of a 3-3 mix here with our small business. And we usually at least 3 times a year bring everybody in here and do our meetings here, since 3 of them are here. And it's nice, but it's super nice when they all come and we all get to collaborate, and we get more done in those 3 days sometimes than we do in 3 months, you know, just as far as really brainstorming, collaboration, knocking stuff out, because you can. So it's really great to find great talent. Like I'm so thankful for the people that I have that are remote and they're so talented. But at the same time, there's so much synergy when people are right there.
Yeah. And I think look, we're a client service organization. So our team spend a lot of times out at our clients. They're everywhere. If we had a monolithic office, we'd have a hard time getting talent in our industry, and they don't want to come to us.
Right.
So, but as you said, it's also a different thing. I think on a day-to-day basis, there's a lot less distraction from people working from home. And, but when you're doing the strategic planning stuff, you know, we do in-person offsites, and that's the time to come together and really hash that stuff out. But we're client service company. So 90% of the time our people are out there working in the teams, delivering services for the clients. But then there are those times to come together. In fact, we had a 15 people in to do pretty advanced leadership training last week. And we as part of that, we got 360 feedback for them from their team. And some with one of our managers, her teammates had said, hey, they're not always available on Slack when I have a question. And she actually followed up and thanked them for the feedback and told them about, you know, the stuff that she was going to do. But one of the things she said is, look, I can't leave Slack on all day. Like, you know, if it's an emergency, like, you know how to read me. But just because you want to ask me something at that moment, you know, I'm trying to focus and deliver and do all this stuff. So I think, you know, there's been a lot of studies that have come out in the last couple of years that have really debunked the productivity of the open office environment. And people are so distracted that they're all sitting there wearing noise canceling headphones and playing music all day, which doesn't really hit on the original intention.
That's really interesting, because I know we find that here for sure. And that's why, especially for some tasks, a couple of the people will say, I'm going to take that home and work on it or finish that later instead of doing that here, because it is distracting. But I didn't realize in big office space that they're now starting to see that is not maybe as productive as what they once thought.
Yeah, there's been some articles published, like I think in pretty big papers, saying they're really starting to think that the having kind of like clear walls or access to management or any of this is correct, but people need private time and private space. And we've gotten everyone really synced up on this thing called GSD time, which is get stuff done for we use that term in this context, where people are really left alone to have that kind of REM work time where they can be in the zone for a couple hours and not be interrupted. I mean, you talk to any world-class high performer leader, and they have a conceptual open door policy, but they also don't let people come in and disrupt them. You know, they have a philosophically open door policy, just not an actual open door policy that allows them to be distracted at any time.
I know that the University of Michigan published a document on, for every interruption that someone gets, it takes them between 11 and 17 minutes to get back on task.
Yeah, I've seen that.
Which I thought was interesting as well. So, like, you could be wasting as much as 20 minutes, you know, to be able to get refocused, kind of get back into what you were doing. So, it's interesting.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's, we have a I mean, in terms of our culture, we have a clear vision. We're open book. Everyone has their goals and KPIs in the system. Everyone knows what success looks like. And we treat people like, you know, adults, and we tell them we expect them to act like adults.
Right. So what do you feel that a couple of your greatest skill sets are that have really helped you in owning the business and in having the success that you've had?
Yeah, I'm generally a believer in trying to play to strengths, not weaknesses. So I think I'm good at setting a vision and having a sense of what's around the corner and where things are going to go. So sort of painting that picture for people, but then not telling them how we're going to get there and really letting them help us figure out how we're going to get there. And I really enjoy helping people build their capacity, and that's the subject of my second book. So I'm trying to help train and build the next generation of our company's leaders. And at the size and scale we're at now, I think that's something that we need. And it's one of the most important things that a company can do. And I focus on the culture. So, you know, I really focus on strategy, what we're going to do next year, in the business. We have a president who runs the business in the current year and makes everything work. I focus on the culture, and then I focus on leadership development.
Very good. So what is one of your most outstanding accomplishments or something that you've achieved that's super meaningful?
One of the things that we have set out to do as a company is and it's become our little moonshot of ours, is to eliminate the practice of 2 weeks notice and create a culture and a company where there are honest conversations, and we don't have the expectation that people work here forever. And so, you know, we have honest conversations, employees have honest conversations with us. And when it's time for someone to do something different, we do that in a respectful way. And we have kind of what we call like an open transition policy. So I've been writing about that. I just did a TEDx talk on it. We're starting to share it more. I'm seeing a lot of interest from other companies on kind of moving in this direction, particularly companies that have a great culture and just find that, like, when someone gives 2 weeks notice, it just doesn't feel right with what they're trying to build. So that's something I'm proud that we've kind of dug in on the last couple of years, and seem to be, you know, making a dent only in our company, but starting to get other people interested in the topic as well.
That is an interesting topic. So what is the alternative, or what is the transition policy? Like, if I were going to say I found a new opportunity and I'm moving on, what that transition looks like, or what might be my timeline in which I'm going to allow for that transition? What's reasonable?
Yes. So we call it a mindful transition program. And actually, it starts a lot before that. Like, people always say, well, that won't work, because when someone gives notice, why are you going to keep them around? And I try to explain, I'm rewinding the tape back 6 months to where, you remember that conversation you had with Julie and she was upset with something and you ignored it and you didn't really, you know, dig into it. And now 6 months later, Julie's telling you that she's going to a new job in 2 weeks. Like, now you're too late. So what we do in those situations is we dig in with Julie and we try to figure out, you know, what's the root of the issue? Is it something we can fix? If not, we stay in touch with her. And then there may be a discussion that was 3 months ago that was like, you know what, Julie, like, it sounds like you want to do something different. We're happy to support you in that. And we work out a transition plan, usually with an outside time frame of about 3 months, where she can continue to work here and look for a job. And we do that in an open way. We start looking for her replacement, and we've just found it a lot more productive. And I know a lot of people will push back and tell me all kinds of things. Well, people steal stuff, or what about that? And I always say, like, look, you're just more comfortable. You know, these are known and open discussions we're having. You have a lot of people that have probably quit and stayed, or just the problems that you don't know about. You know, we haven't had a lot of problem when we kind of lay all our cards on the table, and we address two things, you know, which is that we care about that person as a person, but also that for whatever reason, you know, the job is not a fit for them. Mm-hmm. And just, you know, ignoring that is also just not an option, and doesn't help either party.
I agree. And I think, I know we've been faced with, like, someone that has got a pretty important, you know, situation. And then you're right. I wish they would just come and be open and honest and say, this is how I'm feeling. Instead of they go look, and then they've got this job, and then they're giving you a 2 week notice. And there's no way, when somebody is an integral part of your team, that you're going to be able to train and replace and transition in 2 weeks. There is just absolutely no way.
Yeah, they think, right. I mean, by the time this episode is, I just did a TED talk on this, on how to eliminate 2 weeks notice, and it's probably be out by the time this episode comes out so people can find it. But as I said, it's, you know, the employee thinks they're doing the right thing. In the US, somehow 2 weeks notice is the standard. But how they leave that relationship, you know, that boss may feel like, I invested in you for years and you're giving me 2 weeks notice. I mean, that's all they know, is sort of the 2 weeks notice. But it's really on the company. Like, we went to employees and it took a couple years. We said, look, if you come to us in a discussion about being unhappy, want to look for another job, anything, we will not walk you to the door. Mm-hmm. You can all hold us accountable for this. And we had to say this over and over and do it over. We had to change the narrative because they just don't trust the company. They're used to, like, look, if you tell the truth, then people say, oh, don't tell them the truth, you'd be out of a job. So we really took that off the table, unless they're, you know, someone is a huge breach of trust or fiduciary, sure, or something, you know, right? But in a normal situation, we've gotten these discussions to start much earlier, and when we see a sign of a problem, we dig into it early, and we have a bunch of decision trees on kind of like, is this a solvable problem? And if it's not solvable, like, why don't we talk about now what next steps are, rather than kind of let this follow its natural progression to where 6 months later you're surprising us by giving us 2 weeks notice. After, you know, asking for all these doctor's appointments and all this, there's Shakespeare's quote, you know, all's well that ends well. And I don't think the employees realize too, that sometimes how this ends, like, it can really override 3 to 4 years of great work that they did and leave a bad taste in that person's mouth, who they may need as a reference down the line, or mm-hmm. more commonly these days will get called as a back channel reference and be asked, you know, what they thought of that employee. And I particularly in the millennials, I don't think they realize that they may have a whole group of people out there that are blockers in their career because of how they left the organization that they were at.
I agree. This has been a fascinating conversation. It's not part of our agenda today, but I love going down these rabbit holes because I think that this is what's reality today in the workplace, and people are going to have to create. This is what we've always done. You kind of got to work against what we've always done, you know, better.
There's no pensions out there. There's right. No life. You know, this is not lifetime employment. And I think as soon as companies acknowledge that, they can develop a better way. And we've been very happily and openly sharing kind of what we've done there, because we really would love to see other companies adopt that.
That's great. So tell us then about a challenge or obstacle that you faced, and then how you worked through that.
Yeah. You know, one of the things of a growing company is that, and if you grow at 20, 30, 40% a year, every time you double, someone told me this, and I think it's true. Every time you double, you break about half your people and half your processes. So, you know, that's been an ongoing challenge to get ahead of that. And it's why we try to invest in people, as much as we can, to really build them up and help them on the growth curve. But what we've had to learn to do is to really evaluate what we need, evaluate the demand, and you know, as you start to have managers, I always say, like, you're a great manager when you make the difficult decisions. So I think the mistake I've made is seeing writing on the wall for either a person or a process, kind of putting it under the rug, hoping it would get better. And it never does. We've gotten more comfortable acting earlier, and probably, you know, sometimes what might seem like, you know, a little premature on things when we just know where we're going to be in 6 to 12 months and don't want to sort of sweep the problem under the rug and have it kind of show back up later on.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Let's talk a little bit about what working from your happy place means to you. That's kind of the topic of our show today. And it's interesting enough, the one that everyone always says, this was the toughest question for me.
Yeah, we spend a lot of time on sort of strengths, helping people actually figure out their why, their core values beyond just work. Because I think working from your happy place is really from a sense of alignment. Like I always say, I think we're like the greatest place to work in the world, for the right people who love and live by our core values. And for other people, we are not. So it's not an absolute. So there's a Gandhi quote that happiness is what you think, say, and do. And so that's what we're really trying to get aligned. Like, can we find people who are really, doing what they want to do, saying what comes naturally to them and aren't making any compromises. And to me, that's happy. The notion of balance can leave people a little dissatisfied. We talk about sort of work-life integration. Like, how do you have great work experiences? And then at the same time, how do you have good family time and personal experiences? And how do those all kind of fit together?
Right. I agree. So what advice would you give to others wanting to either own their own business, start their own business, be an entrepreneur that is just really wanting to go down a different path? Maybe even they've hit a crossroads in life with what they've done for many, many years and would like to do something different than what they've done.
Well, probably a couple of different pieces of advice. The first is, when you know what you want to do, I think they probably want to, act a little bit sooner. As I said in the last example, anytime I've waited on something that I've known I really should do or wanted to do, then that doesn't change. And it just makes the decision harder down the line. I think the second thing is really to figure out what it is that they want personally and professionally. As I mentioned before, one of the things we try to focus on is people really understanding their core values, and we're all wired in a different way. There are things that we want. Some of us can understand that, explain that, intellectualize that. Others really have a harder time doing that. And so they may be doing something that they just don't want to do. And I think if you can get clarity around that, then you can start to think about, decisions that really makes sense for you and make the right ones. If you don't know what your core values are, if you aren't sure the direction you want to go in, if you don't know kind of what you want, I think it's really hard to know whether you're making the right decisions or the wrong decisions.
Right. And tell us and share with us some exciting things that you're working on. And then, of course, close with where people can find you.
Sure. Well, the most exciting thing I'm working on now is my second book called Elevate, and I've also relaunched my podcast with the same name. So the Elevate podcast, and those are both at robertglaser.com. And that's a book that's come out of a Friday Forward email that I started a few years ago as a note to my team and has grown to almost 100,000 people around the world with a kind of inspirational little note I write each Friday. I started that book about 2 or 3 years ago, and it's finally launching October 1st. So I'm excited about that and knee deep in the marketing. And I think it can help a lot of people who actually want to improve, but need a kind of a blueprint for how to improve and build their capacity, and also use capacity building as a leadership strategy.
That is great. And when will they be able to pre-order that, or can they even do, when will that be available?
Yeah, it's available now, I think, on Amazon and Barnes & Noble's for pre-order, and it'll ship October 1st.
Okay. When my book released, it was on October 5th, and so I always think that's a really great time to release a book.
Right before the holiday. Well, yeah, it's right before the holiday push. You know, your goal is to get it on the holiday gift list, and then it's a good time of year.
Yep, absolutely. Well, this has been delightful. Thank you so much for being on. Now, how, if people wanted to get on that list for your Friday Forward, how would they do that?
Sure. You can Google Friday Forward, it should come right up, or the URL is fridayfwd.com, where there's also a link to it again at robertglaser.com.
Okay, because that sounds like that would be something that would be beneficial to anyone.
Yeah, I hope so. And then if you enjoy it, you can stay on it. And if not, you can unsubscribe anytime.
There you go. Well, Robert, thanks so much for being our guest today.
Thanks, Belinda.
Thanks for joining us at Work From Your Happy Place. If you like what you hear, please share it with your friends. And be sure to rate and review us on iTunes or Stitcher. For a free gift on finding your own happy place, please visit workfromyourhappyplace.com and click on the free audio button. Thanks again for listening.